Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers, a dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends, a place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it. No matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. It's a brand new week and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me from the Supernatural News Desk, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Are you ready for a new week, sir?
I am ready for a new week, yeah.
Good, good. Lots of stories to share with us?
Oh, yes.
All right, we've got some parashare coming up in a bit. Where will we begin today in the world of supernatural news?
Well, evidently, we're going to England, where the Black Monk of Pontefract is getting around, Dave. It's not just a local entity anymore.
What?
Yeah, he likes to get out and see the sights and go to museums and take in this. He's not just hanging around the house anymore.
I guess not. That was very Floyd the Barber of you. He's not just hanging around the house anymore, Andy.
Holy old reference.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just saying. Own it if you got it, son.
Wow. A dad has captured a chilling clip of Ghost of Black Monk of Pontefract peering at him through a museum window. The spine-tingling footage was taken in a museum and is said to be haunted and shows a shadowy figure shaped like the round face of a bald man. Wait a minute. Staring intently down at Sean Reynolds as he speaks to the camera. A dad believes he has captured the chilling moment that the ghost of the Black Monk of Pontefract peered at him through a museum window. The spine-tingling footage was taken in a museum that is said to be haunted and shows a shadowy figure shaped like the round face of a bald man, again staring intently at Sean Reynolds as he speaks at his camera. 34-year-old paranormal investigator Sean was editing clips from his trip to Abbey House Museum in Leeds, York, last month when he spotted the strange face lurking behind him. The ghostly face is peeking out from a pub on a Victorian street preserved within the museum that the monk would have strolled down many times in his life as it leads to the monastery. Video from just moments earlier of the same house, which is locked to the public, shows a clear window which Sean believes suggests that the spirit turned up specifically just to watch him. Ooh, he's being stalked by the Black Monk of Pontefract.
Oh, that monk is so randy.
He is. Sean of Liverpool said, "While I was investigating the museum, I kept hearing these ghostly moans and groans, hey now, and I was getting fantastic results on all my equipment." All his equipment, Dave.
You have to self-edit once in a while, Tim. It just helps.
Well, it's how it's typed, you know. Every time I heard I want to read it the way they typed it. Just, you know. Every time I heard a nose, it would send shivers down my spine as I was completely alone. And to get back to safety, I would have had to navigate the labyrinth of Victorian streets in the dark. But it wasn't until I came to edit the footage that I noticed something very unusual on camera. As I was doing my piece to camera to open the show in the first floor window of a pub behind. before I jumped to any paranormal conclusions. I wanted to check the other footage and see if it was pareidolia, a random pattern, but to my surprise in earlier shots, there was no one there. It's like this strange figure had turned up just to watch what I was doing, and I knew it couldn't be a person because the pub is locked to the public. As I went through the footage frame by frame, I actually saw the figure move as well. I was stunned. I kept rewatching it to make sure I wasn't imagining things. There have been sightings of the black monk of Pontefract scurrying around the museum as if he's frightened. The Victorian streets, I stood on leads right to the abbey, so it could well be the black monk. He would have walked those streets at the time he was alive. Seeing him standing there would have been so exciting. It was one of the things to hear noises and see figures in the dark, but to see this figure that couldn't be human, a monk in the window with all the lights on, was a brilliant encounter. TV producer and presenter Sean was at the museum filming for his latest season of his paranormal investigation series, Ghost Dimension. The dad of three was invited to Abbey House, as the museum has been at the center of ghostly goings-on since as early as 1929, when a live-in caretaker heard a locked and bolted door open and close. And in more recent years, staff have experienced sightings of the black monk, felt their hair being pulled, and heard children's voices, according to a museum's event organizer, Mark Kilvington. Originally a skeptic, 48-year-old Mark said he cannot deny the existence of the paranormal after working in the museum for 20 years. Mark said, "I have experienced a few things over the years. It started when I was locking up with a colleague, and we both heard a child's voice saying, 'Are you going now?' There's also this area in the streets for about 8 years where you could step into this one spot, and you would be overwhelmed by the smell of pipe tobacco, and the smell would go as soon as you moved. At first, being alone in the museum and hearing these voices was really quite frightening, but I am just so used to it now." He's just so used to it now, Dave. You tell yourself that you're just imagining things. "I've always been someone who needs things proven to me." It says proving, but proven. But a few years ago, we had the first ghost hunt here, and they picked up loads of paranormal activity. It was after that that the staff started openly speaking to each other. They were shaking as well, Dave. They were shaking and quaking in their boots.
Wow, words is hard today, Tim.
Well, you know, a couple of misspelled words, and it throws you all off. It was after that the staff started openly speaking to each other about what we had all experienced. It really validates it. So many people have different encounters, and it can't be coincidence. So there you go.
Or can it? That's the real question. I know you're chomping at the bit. There's a story you're going to be trying to rub in my face because one of the most brilliant men on the planet said something earlier this week. But Tim, I think we have some more ghost stories I want to cover before you get to gloat again about how your version of the future is getting closer and closer.
No, Dave, you just take it that I'm just going to come out and gloat right away. I mean, I want to savor that moment, my friend.
Pretty much.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to
where
the
ghost. Where are we going next?
We'll do the ghost stories first. An investigator snapped a selfie with a terrifying ghost face. A paranormal buff investigating an infamous U.S. haunted hotel has had the shock of his life when he snapped a bone-chilling ghost face in a selfie, and it's not Ghostface Killa of Wu-Tang Clan, Dave. That's an old reference, believe it or not. 33-year-old Roger Estrada took a spooky snap in the lobby of the notorious 113-year-old Hotel Redland in Homestead, Florida, during the middle of the night when he claims that no one else was around. "Ever since I was a child, I've been interested in the paranormal, and I've always tried to capture ghosts on camera," Roger said, "but I've never been successful. This is really the first time I've been able to get anything good on film, and I just can't believe it," he went on to say. The Redland Hotel is one of the oldest buildings in Homestead, and Roger has been wanting to explore it for a long time. "I've heard so many stories of the scary things that happened there. It's supposed to be really haunted," he said. "My friend who works there let me come around during the middle of the night when there's no one staying there to see if I could catch anything." According to Roger's friend, 28-year-old David Torres, the hotel has had a long history since it was built in 1904. David, who works at the hotel's overnight front as the hotel's overnight front desk clerk and security guard, said he believes the establishment is definitely haunted. David says, according to locals, a huge fire ripped through the hotel in 1913 and killed 17 guests while they were sleeping in their beds. And in another dark twist, he claims a young woman was brutally murdered after she was thrown out of a window of the hotel in the 1930s. David says there was also rumors in the hotel that it was used as a speakeasy during the Prohibition era and was frequented by the infamous mobster Al Capone. David went on to say, "I will often be here alone and will hear things during the night. I've been the only one here and heard footsteps coming from upstairs like someone is walking around, but no one is there. The lights will often keep flickering on and off. Things in the hotel move around and we think that we've lost them, only to find it is in a completely different place later. One night I walked outside at 3 a.m. to smoke a cigarette and locked all the doors, but when I went back to go outside, or when I went to go back inside the door, the door was already open. I was the only one there." Journalists, they're not as good as they used to be. Roger's creepy image has divided the online supernatural community, who have likened the freaky face to legendary horror flick villains Michael Myers from Halloween and Friday the 13th's Jason Voorhees. "I just started taking random pictures, not really sure of what I might find," he says. "I didn't feel anything at the time. It wasn't until I got home and started looking through photos I had taken that I saw something weird in the background. I looked closer and realized it was a face. I was shocked. I couldn't believe that I actually might have captured something supernatural. Everyone I've shown has said that it's really creepy." According to David, room 202 is the most haunted room in the hotel, and even he steers clear of it. "I wanted to go into room 202, but I'm just a bit too afraid," he says. "Last week there were guests who were staying in that room, and I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden they just grabbed their bags and left. They were terrified, but they wouldn't tell us what happened. It's just spooky, and I can't explain it," he went on to say. And there you go.
Hmm. So we've got a lot of ghosties popping up in pictures, huh?
Yep.
Is it Black Friday Ghosty Awareness Week or what?
It must be. It must be the, like you said.
All right, where are we going next?
Let's see here. Ooh, there's an alien story. Ooh, aliens, Dave. I think we'll go on to aliens. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, according to this story, reaching out to alien life will not cause a dangerous invasion. This according to a paranormal expert. Don't tell Stephen Hawking that, by the way. Messages to nearby aliens are no threat to Earth despite transmissions sparking fears of a potential invasion. This according to a paranormal expert. Dr. Douglas, is this, it's either Vakuk or Vakok, one or the other. I'll go Vakuk. President of the Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or METI, organization, announced his research group as... I'm struggling here, Dave, with his last name. I'm trying not to laugh. I'm trying not to let the third grader in me come out right now. Had overseen a series of transmissions being sent to outer space from a 32-meter radio dish north of the Arctic Circle in Norway. The astronomers sent a mathematical and scientific tutorial created by METI, as well as samples of music from Spain's Sonar Festival. Oh, I don't know if you've ever been to the Sonar Festival, Dave, but the music there is excellent.
No.
Oh, I tell you, it's good stuff. But the move sparked fears from some scientists who believe the signals could trigger an invasion from outer space after aliens learn of our existence. The transmissions were sent towards the planet GJ-237b, which sounds like a signal from a quarterback, which is believed to be one of the closest potentially habitable celestial bodies to Earth. The GJ-273b planet orbits Lutyen star. Lutyens? A red dwarf about 12.4 light years from Earth. Dr. I'll say Vakuk told the New Scientist GJ273b is one of dozens of planets that could host life found in the past two decades thanks to advances in astronomy. Following the transmissions, the scientists warned these signals could spark an alien invasion of Earth. Dan Werthamer, a SETI researcher at the University of California at Berkeley, said 98% of astronomers and SETI researchers, including myself, not me, but the guy in the article, think that METI is potentially dangerous and not a good idea. It's like shouting in a forest before you know if there are tigers, lions, and bears, oh my, or other dangerous animals there, Dave.
Good God, man. What kind of dope are you on today?
Not just plain.
I'm an animal.
But Dr. Vakuk, who founded the organization METI, insists there's no treat. Why would there be no treat out in the forest? He said they overlook one critical point. Any extraterrestrials on GJ273B capable of interstellar travel would also be advanced enough to know of our existence already. Oh, geez. Didn't think of that. For nearly a century, we have been transmitting evidence of our technology through radio and television signals leaking into space. Why? Because we can't keep our big fat mouth shut. Which civilization only slightly more advanced than ours could have already readily detected. Sending intentional signals does not increase the chances of being detected by any civilization advanced enough to threaten us. Even if there is a chance ET already knows we are here, there are still good reasons for transmitting, he went on to say. Addressing skeptics of alien life being found, Dr. Vakuk admitted that more work needs to be done to reach other galaxies. He added, it lets us test one explanation for why we haven't yet discovered aliens, even though more than half a century has passed since SETI began the first modern-day search for extraterrestrial intelligence by listening for their signals. Are we likely to get a reply, he asks? Only if the galaxy is chock full of intelligent life. Perhaps more likely, we will need to repeat this process with 100 stars or 1,000 or 1,000,000 before we detect a reply, if one ever comes. Past messages have been one-off affairs that would fail this follow-up check. By repeating our message, any recipients could also correct errors that will inevitably occur as the signal passes through the interstellar medium. METI's message includes several novel features. It was sent three times a day over three successive days, giving astronomers on GJ273b a chance to confirm your signal, or our signal, or their signal, or somebody's signal, assuming they follow protocols like those used by SETI scientists on Earth. Dr. Vakuk and his MET International team will return to the European Incoherent Scatter Scientific Association's radio dish, that's very specific, in Norway next year to retransmit signals to GJ237B. The MET president said, when we return to Norway for a second round of transmissions in April of 2018, 6 months will have passed on our clock, the final time we will encode our message. In our message at the end of the third and final day's transmission next year is the date 25 years into the future, June 21st, 2043, when we will be listening for a response. So there you go.
Well, hopefully we'll start to get something. It'd be nice to get solid proof and some kind of communication besides one random stray radio signal. And I'm still not sure I understand it, how that wow signal might have just been a radio signal from a passing meteorite and that isn't still something that we should find pretty amazing. Right? I mean, if a meteorite is broadcasting a signal, shouldn't that be something as well?
Well, you would think, but space makes noise, evidently. I know that sounds weird, but it, I mean, in space when...
Well, I know it makes noise, but like that wow signal came from what they believe was like a meteorite or a comet that was broadcasting a signal.
Well, in a way, broadcasting a signal. It wasn't generating a signal, but it might have been a signal that bounced off of it, sure. I don't think it was actually sending
its own
signal.
No, that's what I'm saying,
signal.
Is that it came from that passing deal. That's what I'm saying. That was the part I didn't understand on how that could be. And then they're like, oh, it's not alien intelligence. It's just a passing meteorite or comet. Well, again, but how did that signal originate? Where did it originate from? It wasn't anything we had sent out because we would have recognized the signal. so it wouldn't have been just reflecting it back. I don't know. It's weird. You'd think after all this time we would, and again, I guess assuming that we haven't, but you would think that we would have had some kind of better conclusive radio communication or some kind of communication. You know, I know there's a lot of people right now saying, well, we do, Dave. There's aliens are in contact with us constantly. You talk to guests all the time that have, you know, pollinated with them. But I just mean, overall, you would think that on a more global scale, we would know about this more. And there would be some kind of repeatable signal or something coming from out there.
See, that's why I tend to be a skeptic. Here's the thing. If something is sitting out there silent and not wanting to talk to you, then why do you keep trying to communicate with it anyways? If there is actually something out there, and if you communicate,
it takes a while to transmit out to these far reaches too. So it might be that we're sending messages and it takes 20 years for that message to reach the point we're going to. So I understand you just keep bombarding to let them know, hey, we're still here. You know, if it's taking a while for those to be cycled through.
And you could be being the irritating little brother on the block, too, and that you're like, hey. And
we're also just assuming that they've got radio technology. They may communicate it a completely different way.
Exactly.
Smoke signals. And we're never going to make it that far.
Right.
Where are we going next?
We're talking UFO sightings around the globe next.
Okay.
Hold on just one second here.
I think I heard about this, the UFO Stalker app. The like interactive map to let you kind of
see
UFOs.
Yep, it's a interactive map revealing the location of UFO sightings around the globe. The map allows users to view UFO sighting reports based on location and by date. Then it then displays UFO symbols on a map of that area, which users can click to view each report. The map reveals that in the UK alone, there have been 7 reported UFO sightings in November. On the 15th of November, one user reported seeing a UFO over Aberdeen. The report states, "Standing at my kitchen window, I noticed a very bright red and white light flashing every 2 seconds. I instantly knew this was not a passenger plane or a helicopter. The object itself was traveling directly north. It just looked like a medium brightness star, but had an intensely bright white and red light. The white light was stacked on top of the red light, and they would pulse on and off every 2 seconds. Meanwhile, in another location, another person spotted a mysterious object on November 8th. The report states, I went out into my front garden for a cigarette with my husband and looked up at the clouds. Above the houses across the street, I noticed a very bright white intermittent trail. And when following the trail to the right, I noticed a small white glowing spot or orb moving in front of the clouds. I told my husband to look at it, but the trail had disappeared and he wasn't able to see the orb before it disappeared. I'm not certain whether it went into the clouds or just disappeared. UFO sightings were less frequent in Australia, where there were only 4 reports this month, but the majority of the UFO sightings were in the U.S., where 26 reports have been filed in November. On the 20th of November, a report filed in Albuquerque, New Mexico, stated, I was driving around the Knob Hill area of Albuquerque. I turned down a side street and saw a triangle-shaped craft with lights that went up the side of it. It was illuminated, so it formed a V-shape. I stopped to pull over and look at it because I thought it was strange. Witnessed it for about 10 seconds before it was hidden behind a tree. The Air Force base is close by, so I assumed it was a military aircraft, but haven't seen one like it before. There you go.
That's it. All right. Where are we off to next?
Let's see here. The next story. Let's talk about evidence of a grisly 4,000-year-old werewolf ritual discovered in Russia, Dave.
What?
Yeah.
All right, now you got my attention. Werewolves in Russia. Wasn't that a song?
It is.
Werewolves in Russia.
Yeah. It has to do with Chinese food. It's a very fascinating song. Our fascination with the idea of werewolves is age old, whether they're the terrifying stuff of nightmares or the hunky foes of sparkling vampires. Oh, God.
Hunky foes. Shut up.
Hunky foes. I'm embarrassed to even read that line. But 4,000 years ago in Russia, apparently they took the idea of becoming one rather seriously. Of course, 4,000 years ago in Russia, the idea of werewolves as we know it hadn't been invented yet. Lycanthrope's beginnings are contentious. But the idea gained the most traction in medieval European folklore. Instead, the idea was to channel the wolf's killer instinct by imbibing its spirit by eating it. Yum! It's like a chili dog, but
yeah,
but it's a werewolf.
So that's the way they were trying to. It was, I'm sorry. Go on with this. Go.
There is a long story of the long history, rather, of the concept of boys and men eating dogs and wolves. Ooh, icky, no, and occasionally transforming into them as an initiation ritual to become a man or warrior. That ranges from the Greeks to the Celts to the Indo-Europeans. That inhabited what is now modern Russia. I don't like where the story's going. However, this has only been seen in the writings of various cultures. There has never been any physical evidence of these rituals, Dave, until now. Anthropologists working on an ancient settlement in the Russian steppes discovered the remains of 64 dogs and wolves that appeared to show evidence of ritual sacrifice and consumption. In a paper published by the Journal of Anthropological Archaeology, they theorized that this was indeed proof of a Bronze Age boy-to-man initiation ritual. The remains were found... Hold on just one second. The remains were found at the... is this Shrubnaya Culture Settlement? Oh boy, look at that name. Of the Krasnosamarsko that dates to 1900 through 1700 BCE, the charred remains of the animals, some wolves but mostly dogs, show evidence of being roasted and filleted, unmistakable signs of consumption. The bones also showed precision and preparation in the way that they were chopped up, suggesting ritual significance. At the time,
but isn't that, I mean, I don't know. Isn't that a jump when it's 4,000 years old to assume that it was some kind of werewolf rite of passage? Couldn't it just been a hungry group of men that came upon some wolves and made dinner out of them?
But Dave, there's more. At the time, dogs would have not been considered a food source, but companions. Touché. The remains revealed.
Unless you're really hungry and there's no other food, then your companions become the best food available, I think, right? I'm just saying. It was a different time. It was 4,000 years ago. We weren't as civilized as we is today, son.
The remains revealed the dogs would have been healthy adults, suggesting they had some importance in the community. They were well looked after. Most were also male, as were the dogs mentioned in the written accounts of the ritual. Oh, so they're all male dogs. David Anthony and Dorcas Brown of Hartwick College suggested in their study that this evidence of consuming dogs backs up narratives that the Bronze Age people performed initiation rituals symbolized by transformation into a dog or a wolf. There are scholarly arguments that claim the ancient customs linking warrior men with fierce animals like wolves, as well as a suggestion of killing and eating them to take on their strength and hunting instincts, could be the origins of legends of men transforming into wolves. Ooh, it says here perhaps werewolves have been around longer than we thought. That's that story.
Could be.
That's
children of the night. Shut up. All right, where are we going to go next?
From one creature to another, Dave, we will go. We'll talk about Sasquatch. A Sasquatch tracker sues, it looks like, British Columbia for the chance to prove the mythical beast exists. A self-proclaimed Sasquatch tracker is suing the BC government in hopes of proving once and for all that the elusive forest-dwelling ape men of folklore is real. Todd Standing's lawsuit claims the province in refusing to recognize the existence of Sasquatch is, they use the plural, is shirking its duty to manage the wildlife living within its borders. It blows my mind this species has not been acknowledged yet, Standing told CTV News. They won't look at the evidence. That's why I must go into court and prove it, and I will prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Standing, who is currently promoting a new documentary called Discovering Bigfoot, claims he has an airtight case involving video, DNA samples, fingerprints, and expert witness testimony. With that evidence, Standing believes he'll be able to demonstrate the hairy mythical creatures are roving the Pacific Northwest. His goal, to force a government biologist to accompany him into the wilderness for a period of no less than 3 months on a Sasquatch hunt. I've done this multiple times before. I do it with a wildlife officer, but they refuse, Standing said. Maybe he's tricked one too many wildlife officers into the wilderness, if you know what I mean. Numerous alleged Sasquatch encounters have been reported in BC. In fact, according to Bigfoot Encounters website, some of the earliest sightings came from the province's Toba Inlet. But given the lack of convincing evidence and abundance of proven frauds, sightings are generally dismissed as false impressions or hoaxes. Standing himself has been accused of staging encounters online, but he blames much of that on envious rituals with the Sasquatch tracking community. Gandhi and Mother Teresa had haters, he told CTV News. He's comparing himself to Gandhi and Mother Teresa. Of course, I have haters. I have people that think they're competing with me, because really the Sasquatch community is the Sasquatch competition. Really. They all want to be the best. They all want gold medals, Dave. That's what it comes down to.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. He claims to have had more than 50 encounters with Sasquatches, 8 of which he documented on video. Standing's lawsuit was filed in Golden last week, and the government has 21 days to file a response at taxpayers' expense. Though Standing believes he'll have a chance to prove Sasquatches exist in court, it's likely lawyers for the province will ask the judge to throw out the case before any evidence is heard. Asked to comment on the lawsuit Monday, Environment Minister George Heyman gave a hearty laugh in the halls of the BC legislature. I've heard about it. I obviously will need to get to further briefings on the subject of Sasquatch, as Heyman said before walking away. And then he said, thank you very much. That's the name of that story there.
All right. Well, fight away, young man. Fight away. Make British Columbia allow you to do that. How else are we going to learn?
That's right. How else are we going to find out if Sasquatch exists if we don't fight in court?
How many more stories do we have here, sir?
We have two. First one, by the way, has only been spammed to my Facebook account 475,000 times, so let's get to this one first. The man who wanted to launch the rocket, or he wanted to be raunchy as well, he wanted to launch this rocket to prove the Earth is flat, Dave. You know this guy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Evidently, it's off. Yeah, he's not going to do
it. He's off, or the launching the rocket is off?
The launch is off. He's not doing it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A man who believes Earth is flat was ready to launch himself from a rocket in California on Saturday afternoon to prove it. He canceled his plans, however, at least for now. Not having the required federal permits plus mechanical problems with his motorhome / rocket launcher. You heard me right there.
Okay.
Forced self-taught rocket scientist Mad Mike Hughes. I don't know that those two go together.
Why not?
Rocket scientist and Mad Mike Hughes.
Why? That sounds like a connection made in heaven.
Well, actually, rocket scientists have to be well-calculated and in their right mind, so they probably shouldn't be mad.
They can still be a madman. Hey, I will tell you this. Remember this now, that Brian May from Queen is truly a rocket scientist and a rocker. Did you know that?
Yeah, but he's not mad.
He's helped with NASA. He's kind of a madman.
Well, on stage.
He's a wild rocker. He's on, right. So that's the difference. But this guy's taking on the persona. He's trying to defeat the stigma of being a rocket scientist nerd, Tim. Don't bring on his parade by calling him out.
Calculated on stage, Dave. This guy truly is, you know, a few fries short of a Happy Meal. Brian May.
He built a rocket. How about you? Who's a few fries shy now? Boy, that was a harder thing to say than I thought it would be.
I'm not the only one having issues
today. Try to say few fries shyer now.
Who's a few fries shyer now?
Wow.
Huh? See?
That you can say, but the written word, totally not in your caliber.
See?
All right. Okay.
So Mad Mike Hughes. A man without a brain.
Big fan. Well, that's kind of a rough call, but go ahead.
Put his experiment on hold. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the only one who has sense in this story, told me they would not allow me to do the event, Hughes went on to say in a YouTube announcement, at least not at this location. He said that amid international attention over his plans to launch into the Atmosflat, as he's calling it. It's been very disappointing, he said. Hughes is a 61-year-old limo driver, of course, who has spent the last few years building a steam-powered rocket out of salvage parts in his garage. Mm-hmm. His project has cost him $20,000, well spent, by the way, which includes Rust-Oleum paint to fancy it up in a motorhome he bought on Craigslist that he converted into a ramp. Hughes was set to launch this rocket PM on Saturday.
He's mad, all right. He certainly is mad.
I give the guy props. He's taken a challenge. He's not sitting back passive about it. He has a belief, and he wanted to use it. And lo and behold, the government, who doesn't want us to know the Earth is flat, won't let him launch, Tim. This is in your conspiratorial wheelhouse, son.
It's not. I don't buy into this. Why did if he had $20,000 sitting around, why didn't he just throw it at BOB and they could launch their satellite together and find out for sure?
Well, maybe he and BOB, why build the rocket? Maybe Madman and the BOB aren't on talking terms.
Plans have been in the works for more than a year, and Hughes said he initially was told by BLM that it was up to the Federal Aviation Administration to approve the launch. The FAA, Hughes said, told him, "We can't honestly approve it. We just know that you are going to do it there." News of his plans began to spread Monday and gain worldwide attention, which Hughes believes is why BLM began to push for permits. My feeling is that one of the top executives at the Bureau of Land Management called Needles, California, saying, "What's going on? Who permitted this?" Hughes said. Plus, as he and his team were preparing to leave Wednesday, the motorhome / rocket launcher broke down in his driveway.
We
want everyone to please stay tuned, Hughes said, adding he has set up a YouTube page where he will post updates. Maybe he should take some of that money and hire a mechanic. His plan is to try again next week.
What are our plans this week, Brain? The same thing as last week. Try to take over the flat Earth. I don't know, man. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. But, again, you've got other guys that are up there doing this that should have blown the whistle by now as well, unless they're part of this global conspiracy.
You're really trying to stir them up this week, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, why not? All right, speaking of stirring them up, I know you've held off, Tim. Your final story is one that you like to grind in my face as your belief in the future might be closer than ever before.
It's not just mine, Dave. You know, the army of darkness has risen to my side on this. In fact, every time I turn around now, Dave. No, Dave. They have.
Not the whole thing.
Firmly behind me.
No, I think there's a few of them. A couple of wackadoos. Probably a guy that wants to launch his own rocket from his backyard.
No. You're the only one on that guy's side. Every day, someone comes at me with a new story. They come at me and they say, "Tim, look, here's another story. Here's another story of someone who..."
Which proves to me that it will never happen, because if there truly was some kind of dark underpinnings to this whole thing, they wouldn't be talking about it in the news. They'd be hiding it like they are the zombie apocalypse. Think about it.
It's going to happen, Dave. It's happening right now.
All right. Let's hear your story.
I'd like to, but like I said, it's happening right now.
Oh, it's fighting you?
It's fighting me.
Technology. See? Yeah, see, Tim? See, that's just proof. The zombies have taken over, and now systems are failing. That's why your computer's not working right. Nothing
zombies
to do
can't
with
operate
AI.
A computer.
You don't know that, Tim. I've met a few zombies that do.
All about AI, Dave. It's all about, Elon Musk has basically confirmed that AI is coming to eradicate the human race. Elon Musk,
No, not again! They keep rising to take over our planet, Tim. Stupid
AI.
They do. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
I'd like to, but they've taken over my computer.
Seriously, you just can't get into it.
It won't move. The story won't move for me.
Interesting.
Everything else will around my computer,
But that won't.
No, it won't. The page won't move.
See, Tim, I don't know what that means. I'm just guessing that.
It means that that AI doesn't want me to read the information about them taking over.
Well, Boston Dynamics video of a humanoid robot executing a perfect backflip sparked a lot of dark humor. And now billionaire Elon Musk has responded with dark seriousness. He was one of the Sith Lords, wasn't he? Dark seriousness?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
About the risks posed by super intelligent, super agile bots. Musk suggested that future robots could move so fast they could match the fictional Flash, who eludes his comic book foes by moving too fast for the eye to see. Compared to that superpower, doing human-level backflips is nothing, Musk said in a tweet. This is nothing. I'm reading right from the tweet. In a few years, that bot will move so fast you'll need a strobe light to see it. Sweet dreams. Wow, you nightmare maker. Then Musk added a bit of explanation for those who didn't see where he was going. How could a strobe light help anything see, was the question. Oh, people, you should know better than that. Otherwise, you just see a blur. The agility of Boston Dynamics' Atlas robot gave Musk another opportunity to touch on a theme he's been emphasizing for months, that the potential risks posed by the rapid rise of artificial intelligence are so great that a regulatory regime is needed. We have to regulate AI robotics like we do food, drugs, aircraft, and cars. Public risks require public oversight. Getting rid of the FAA wouldn't make flying safer. They're there for a good reason. This time, Musk drew a response from billionaire venture capitalist Vinod Khosla, whose voluminous portfolio includes several AI and robot companies. Time and place to regulate a little too early today, but will eventually be needed. Today, I worry far more about state actors and criminals using AI for cyber attacks. That comes from Vinod Khosla.
Of course it does.
Musk himself is heavily involved on the frontiers of AI. Interesting. He's warning us, yet he's on the forefront. He's the one that's about to flip the switch to Skynet, Tim. I want you to think about that. Your hero.
He's looking out for us, Dave.
Not only through commercial ventures such as Tesla, which enlists machine learning for its self-driving autopilot platform, and Neuralink, which is working on brain-computer interfaces, but also through his backing for efforts such as OpenAI and the Future Life Institute. This summer, he traded zingers with Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg over AI's risks versus benefits. Will his latest Twitter exchange raise the issue's profile, or will it continue to be an issue primarily of concern to geeks rather than policymakers? Maybe someone should inform an AI political action committee before the robots beat us to it. Tim, that sounds like a call of arms right there to you. You need to start up an AI political action committee. If you don't, you're just wasting your life. I'm just saying.
You think I haven't already started it?
I don't know. Have you?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
Dave.
Yeah.
I've got a committee of at least three people, myself, my imaginary friend, and my teddy bear. Mm. And we all get together in my basement, and we've talked about this thoroughly.
Yeah, well, when you're together in the basement, you, yourself, and I know that you're sitting around sipping on some First Leaf. Stay tuned. We've got more and Parashare coming up next here on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Tim.
Yeah.
I've got copies of Paranormal Challenge, the TV series I was a part of, available autographed. How about them apples?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you're interested, I've got the entire series. It's a mini series of Paranormal Challenge. Zach Bagans, myself, along with two different teams of investigators, go to some of the most haunted locations in the United States to investigate. And we pit them against each other, their knowledge of equipment, their knowledge of history, and their knowledge of evidence and how they present it. That's what we did on the series. It's a lot of fun, a lot of cool stuff going on there. It's every episode. I think it's like 13, 14 episodes of Paranormal Challenge. Autographed DVD set. If you're interested, they're $30 out the door, signed to you if it's in the continental United States. If you're interested, email me, Dave@darknessradio.com.
That's dave@darknessradio.com, and I will get you a copy of Paranormal Challenge and get you autographed, get the invoice out to you and let you know. And do us a favor, too. If you're listening to us through the Darkness Radio app or on iTunes, make sure you rate and review the show. Let them know that you love the show and why. Or just give us 5 stars and don't say a word. Either way, it's a win-win situation. So do what you can to help us. And remember, if you want to pick up any of the books or see any of the DVDs or just get some really cool paranormal swag, check out our Killer Links deal at darknessradio.com. Go right to darknessradio.com. Christmas is coming. Click on that Killer Deals link. It'll take you into our hand-selected Amazon page. There are books. There are DVDs. There are TV series. There are t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, all kinds of cool swag, and some ghost hunting and Bigfoot hunting equipment all right there for you to go through and choose. And remember, every time you make a purchase, a very small percentage of that sale goes right to help your buddies with our administrative costs. So make sure you go take care of that. That's darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Links tab and bookmark it. So anytime you're going to make a purchase, if you go through that link, no matter what you buy, you'll be able to help your buddies out. And that goes a long way to keep this show as free of commercials as we possibly can and make it free for you to continue to listen. Shall we get started with some supernatural parashare here, Mr. Dennis?
Let's do it.
Dave, I was just listening to the show of The Man That Could Fly. That was our Friday show. That was a really kind of interesting show and a kind of off-topic deal. Did you get a chance to tune in on that one, Tim?
Yes, I did.
I'm fascinated, and I started doing a little research on that. Do you realize how many people have been witnessed flying? It's not just a one-off. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I'm going to keep doing some more work on this because if there's a way to fly, dude, I want to do it. I want to fly.
That'd be cool.
I don't need AI. I just want to fly. Anyway, this story says, I was listening to that episode of The Man That Could Fly. When I was around the age of 20, I weighed about 200 pounds or 180 something like that. My sister-in-law, my sister, and my two nephews, who are preteen, performed a similar feat that the doctor was talking about. I sat in the chair, and the four of them got on each side of me, two on each. They started out with one hand over my head, and they worked their way around concentrically. Then they reversed, and they picked me up with no effort, and it totally freaked me out. I did it again with some people at work, and it worked again. It's truly amazing. That was around 38 years ago. My birthday is November 23rd of this year, Thanksgiving, and we're all meeting up, and I want to see if it will work again 38 years later. Thank you for your show. I enjoy it nightly, and that comes from Tim Keating. Well, Tim, I'll tell you what. If it happens, let us know. And if it did happen, I hope you guys are smart enough to videotape it, because we want to see the videotape. That, did you ever do that light as a board, stiff as a feather thing growing up, Tim?
As a matter of fact, I have. And the last time I did it was one of our trips to Gettysburg for phenomenology. I did it on an investigation.
Did it work?
They did it to me, which I can't.
Did it work?
They claim it did. I don't know if it did or not. I didn't feel myself rising.
You don't know if you floated?
I didn't feel myself floating, no.
Okay, well, did the ceiling look closer than it did when you first laid down?
It was dark.
That would be the first tip. Okay.
It was dark. Interesting. I couldn't tell.
See, I did it in a lit room. We had candles going, everything. We saw this kid just float up with us barely touching him. So, I don't know. It's pretty astounding. If you didn't get a chance to listen, go back and check out our Friday episode. It was really cool. Just something different. Hey, Dave and Tim, it's Steve from California again. The story I have, I think, is an interesting one. It involves either divine intervention or me dying and coming back in an alternate timeline. Either way, here's the story. I was driving a friend home to a spot which was much further than I thought, a solid 60 miles from my house, and I was very tired. I remember driving into his town and seeing a large dog running down the side of the road. I dropped my friend off at the house and headed home. I knew I was getting tired but wanted to get home to my bed. Leaving town, I see the same dog as before, lying on the side of the road. I assume dead. Next thing I really remember is passing the zoo 13 miles from the city I left. From there, it was 3 possible routes to get home, but I don't remember which one I took. I remember passing the zoo and waking up the next morning. I drove a solid 30 to 45 minutes, and I don't remember. I'm taking 2 major freeways and a freeway with lots of back roads and stoplights that I don't remember taking. I went outside to look at my car, and it was fine. No dents, no blood smear, nothing. So, as I see it,
as I see it, someone had taken the wheel for me, or I died that night and woke up in an alternate version of me in the closest multiverse possible, if that makes sense. Either way, that's my story. What do you guys think? Keep up the good work and keep up the darkness. And that comes from Steve from California. Steve, I think you've had one too many puffs. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I think that makes complete sense. Although, I'm going to say this. Like, when I drive back from KNSI Radio up in St. Cloud after doing Coast to Coast, I'm on a highway, and I have to take two different highways and then some stop and goes. And there are times I'm so tired and I'm driving, I don't remember the drive. I just remember all of a sudden I'm pulling up into my neighborhood, and I'm like, wow, how the hell did that happen? How did I get here that quick? That muscle memory, right? If you're going somewhere and it happens to pass the road that you're going to stop by, you know, or that you would normally take to get to work, how many times do you actually take that veer off?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so there's that. All right. Let's go into our next story. Dave, this happened about 9 years ago while my wife, Betty, and myself, Don, lived in an apartment in beautiful Hershey, Pennsylvania, directly across the street from the Reese's factory. Oh, Reese's. Whoa. How could you live there and not be 9,000 pounds? That's all I got to know. Just from sniffing it. Well, one day about 10 p.m., I was on my computer while my wife was sleeping, and I heard a noise from the bathroom directly across from where I was sitting. Well, I thought one of our two toy poodles had gotten into the trash. So I turn and look, and I see a gray-haired lady looking at me in the mirror by the sink. I was not freaked out since it was all it was doing was looking at me. I watched for about 5 seconds and nothing was there, just the normal reflection. I went and woke up my wife and told her about this since we always were into the paranormal. I explained to her what the woman looked like, her hairstyle, facial features, the glasses, and the type of dress. My wife then goes into a closet, digging through a few things, and pulls out an old manila envelope with some pictures in it that I didn't even know she had. She finally finds this picture, and it is the woman that I had seen in the mirror. That was her grandmother, Vicky Gibson, who was her mother's mom. My wife then tells me that she has seen her before in a TV that was off and in a mirror, but never told me about it. She was afraid I would call the guys with the long-sleeved white coats to take her away, figuring she had totally cracked. A few weeks after this, we're all watching TV in the living room, and I think I saw something in the hallway, and I guess we both did. Both poodles ran over by the shadow on the wall and just watched it as it faded just before entering the living room. Well, when we heard the pots and pans start moving around, it was not the dogs since they never moved and we had no rodent problems. My wife calls out, "Graham, are you making something good for us?" And the noises stop. Right after this, the dogs came back and just laid on the rug in the living room like nothing happened. This went on about once a week for several years with the shadow moving down the hall and the pots moving with the dogs always right there watching along until the noises stopped. Soon, one of our poodles died, and after 2 months later, the second one passed away, and the shadow person in the hall and the noises in the kitchen stopped. It actually was a bit sad, but we figured her Graham had two friends with her, so she left. We moved back to New Jersey 4 years ago to the house I grew up in and helped my mom after my father passed away, and we have never seen the shadow person we called Graham again. We're always hoping she and our two guys will come by for a visit, but so far, nothing. And that comes from Don and Betty Saunders in East Brunswick, New Jersey. That's pretty powerful. Very cool.
Yeah, it is. But now all I can think of is, why didn't you just go next door and jump into a big vat of chocolate and just lose
right.
yourself?
Why would you leave when you're across the street from the Reese's peanut butter factory?
I know.
Oh, my God. I need. Must have. Mm-hmm. All right. Here we go. Oh, another old man picture ghost story here, Tim. Are you ready?
Ready.
Hey, Dave and Tim, I found your podcast a few months ago. I'm absolutely hooked. I love it. I listen while I get ready and drive to work up at 2 o'clock in the morning, which is located on an Indian reservation that is super dark and with very little cars at that time of the morning. That enhances the scariness of the stories as I listen and drive. Anyway, I have a story to share with you that happened to my daughter in our home. We lived in the house for 8 years and have had many experiences, except for my husband, who has a reasonable explanation, and she puts that in quotations, for any and everything. He is a skeptic to the utter core. The experiences have been mostly just to myself, my daughter, and my youngest son. I have been into the paranormal for many, many years due to living in a haunted or spiritually inhabited house almost my entire life. We have heard, felt, and have visually, mentally seen many things, but this was the craziest one so far. My 19-year-old daughter is very sensitive to energies, especially when entering buildings or houses, and can occasionally see spirits. Now, back in March of this year, she had an old man ghost who would watch her through the small bedroom window on the second floor. Every time she went into her room, she would see him looking at her and watching her. He would move his head around so he could see her at any angle in her room. She would just pretend she didn't see him and would go on with her life. What? Tim, I'm a 50-year-old man, and if I see some creepy guy standing there staring at me in my room, I'm not going back in, especially when it's me time, if you know what I mean. She left the blinds up and open on that window all the time, and one day I asked her why she didn't close it. She had a brilliant answer that I hadn't even thought of. She said, I don't want to close the window because I don't want him in my room. I'm afraid if I close the blinds, he'll come inside. She's so brave that it didn't even freak her out that she and she this was not scary, just very curious. Forward a couple of weeks of him looking into the window. One night she was sleeping and was woken by a loud bang. No one else in the house heard the noise. She woke up and the old man was now in her room. At this point, she had never attempted to speak to him or even acknowledged him. She pretended that she didn't see him in her room, and she watched as he walked around her room and went to the door. She thought he was going to go into the hallway and check out the rest of the house, since now she was wide awake and wondering why he was now inside in her room. She grabbed her laptop that was closed on the bed and turned it on to look at Facebook. As she lay there looking at the computer, the old man did not go into the hallway, but turned around and came up to her and got really close to her face. He never said anything to her or him to her, and she came up so close to his face, she could see his face so well that she could describe it to a sketch artist in great detail. Now, I'm going to stop the story there again, Tim.
Okay.
I don't mean always to give my commentary on these things, but what does that say about our world when you're seeing this creepy man outside your window constantly looking in the window, rotating his head to see you, and then he's in your room, and your first thought is, I'm going to go on Facebook. I'm going to turn on my laptop and go on Facebook. Yeah. How screwed up civilization are we? What happened to good old-fashioned hiding under the covers and screaming like a ninny? What's wrong with that, Tim? That's worked for me for 50 years.
There's nothing wrong with your theory there, Dave. I like yours better than going on Facebook. What are the people on Facebook going to do for you in that moment of danger?
I don't know. She says this has become the norm. Every night, he would be in her room looking around. Eventually, he started going into her closet. She said it was like he was looking for something. She could hear the hangers and stuff moving in the closet. Still, she was so brave and not scared of him. I don't think I would have handled it that well. That's what she says in the letter here. One night, she took a pic of him with her iPhone. She didn't want him to see her taking the pic, so she held her phone so it would be hidden by her arm in the pic. The blur across the bottom is her forearm. At the time, he was in the closet and all of the lights were off in her room. Now, I'm a grown woman, but I still can't sleep in complete darkness without the hall light and the bathroom light and the TV on. And seriously, Grace Under Fire comes on at night and I watch it while I fall asleep. Yay, Brett. That's all part of the story, Tim. And her strength fear amazes me. She texted me the pic that night. She circled where he was and you can see two small white dots, which appear to be his eyes. And if you zoom in, you can see a dark outline of what looks to me like a gorilla or a wolf shape. Holy crap. In the pic, he doesn't look like an old man, Dave. I eventually asked her if she ever tried to ask him what his name is, what he wanted, or what he was doing, and she said she never did. I told her that sometimes you can tell them to go to the light, and you can ask them to go where they need to go. So a week or so after that, I'm asking her about him because she hadn't said anything about him at all. She said that she did what I told her to do. My thought was, oh, crap. What did I tell her to do? And then she said she told him one night to go to the light. She said after that, he left and never saw him again. And that comes from Cheyenne. Now, Cheyenne sent me the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest with you. I don't know if it's just my crappy computer screen or what. I mean, I can see two specks of light that look like glowing eyes, but I can't see the shape. I mean, I can see the pixelization of the darkness kind of after her forearm.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell you if it was in the shape of a dog or a human or what. And I couldn't even tell you that those were eyes. They're just positioned two kind of side by side, which gives you that feel that they're a pair of eyes.
Hmm.
But that's enough. A 19-year-old daughter that has her stuff together that much.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Dave and Tim, how are you? I wanted to thank you guys. Your show reaches out and touches people. Since I know you get a million emails, I'm going to get right to it. I'm not sure if you would categorize this as Mandela effect, but to me, it seems very close. What changed for me was an entire experience similar to that lady you mentioned in the show about the baby. I have a very good auditory memory. I pride myself on it, and it helped me get my master's degree without having to bust my butt like many of my friends. I remember large parts of conversation even from years ago, which makes lying to me a pain, so I never really doubted my memory until this experience. This happened back when my brother was still dating his now wife about 12 years ago, give or take. We would, on occasion, get together and watch TV. That night, we watched Jeepers Creepers 2. We watched TV in the basement where we had a little couch and chairs set up. Everyone usually sat in the same place each time. I remember his girlfriend being very restless because she wasn't enjoying the movie. She'd get up, lay on the floor, go back to the couch, repeated this a few times along with asking some fairly dumb questions. One in particular was about the dog in the movie. She at one point blurted out, "They're not going to kill the dog, are they?" She then went to protest she would stop watching the movie if they did. I'd say a few months passed, maybe close to three, and I was talking to my brother on the phone, and I asked him what he was up to that night. He said he was going to watch Jeepers Creepers 2 because he had never seen it, and nothing else was on or going on that night. I told him we just watched it, and I went on to explain a few scenes, waiting for that bulb to go off and have him say, "Oh, yeah, like when you forget something but someone jogs your memory." But that never came. He said it didn't sound familiar. We went back and forth, me telling him more of the events that went on when we were down there and what was said. I was getting annoyed because I thought he might be messing with me, even though it really wasn't his nature to do so. After hanging up, it bothered me so much I called his girlfriend. We were on good terms. She was like the sister I never had. I ran the whole thing by her only for her to give me the same answer he did. I believed her a bit more than my brother because she was even less likely to play a prank. I got a call from my brother a few days later, and he told me he watched the movie, and he had never seen it before. I sat on the whole thing for a week before I went to Blockbuster to see if I could track down the rental history. If I could prove that we rented the movie, I could shove it in their faces. Unfortunately, they only hold it for so long, and that time period had expired. Some more time passed, and I was talking to both of them, and the topic came up. I flat out asked them if they were just screwing with me. I even said I wouldn't be mad. I just wanted to know the truth at this point, and they both swore they weren't lying, and I believed them. That was the only time I ever watched that movie. It wasn't a dream because I remembered the whole movie and even double-checked it to see if my memories matched the synopsis I found of the movie, and they did. I didn't watch it with anyone else because I never use that room. I'm only down there with them. The whole thing still kind of haunts me. There was also another incident where I met a couple twice at work. The catch was the second time played out exactly like the first time with them saying that they just moved into town 2 days ago. Even the conversation went the same. Anyway, I don't want to bore you with that one. I've droned on too long already. Take care and all the best. And that comes from Tom. Well, Tom, I don't think you were droning on. That's pretty cool. Definitely a weird experience. And yeah, is it a false memory? Is it kind of a more elaborate version of deja vu? Were you remembering something not necessarily from an alternate timeline, but maybe from an alternate universe where you and your brother and sister-in-law did watch it? I don't know. Got another Mandela Effect email. Hi, Dave and Tim. This is a topic that fascinates me. As per your request on today's show, I remember Kit Kat without a dash. I also remember Ringo singing "Do Not Think, Never Think." And we're talking about the song "A Little Help from My Friends."
Mm-hmm.
And I've had so many people respond to me about that. And I remember it very clearly, Ringo singing, "What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?" That makes sense to me, right?
Right.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? You're asking, what would your action be? Would you stand up and would you walk out on me?
Mm-hmm.
However, if you go listen to it, he very clearly says in the original recordings, what would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Which doesn't seem to go hand in hand with the next part of that lyric.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's been brought to my attention ad nauseum that the Joe Cocker version does, in fact, say, what would you do if I sang out of tune? Right?
Mm-hmm.
He says do. He doesn't say think. And that was pushed a lot more down our throats. It's in commercials today, and it was the theme song for the Wonder Years. But I was a much bigger Beatles fan than I ever was of the Wonder Years and Joe Cocker's version. But does that mean that that isn't more imprinted in my memory? I did watch the Wonder Years. So I don't know on that specific one. I will say that that could go either way. And there's been some other interesting aspects. Now, the Berenstain Bears we've been talking about, listen, they can't even get their shit together when they're putting packaging together. Yeah. They'll have the Berenstain Bears on the top, and then on the bottom it's like Mama Berenstain Bear or whatever. And they'll mistype the name twice on the same product. There are DVDs and videos out there that the outside of the package says Berenstain and the inside says Berenstain.
Right.
So I think some of those are just simple mistakes. So Berenstain Bears is off the table for me now. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest. That mm-hmm. is. The Beatles song, I think, is off the table for me. Remembering different things and the Kirk Douglas death and stuff, that's still a big remainder for me. And remembering Nelson Mandela dying in prison, I still remember that. Do you have a memory of that, or do you remember him getting out?
I just remember him getting out. I don't remember him actually dying in prison, though.
No. Well, it's like that time. Remember when I paid you back every cent I owed you,
what?
You know, and now you're trying to tell me, no, I didn't. But I know I did. Pal, I think you're having a Mandela effect, Tim. You're having, this reality, I paid you back every penny. So it's time, I'm just going to take that off the table as well now. Let's just, it's gone, it's off the table. I'm glad we were able to finally put that past us. For finally admitting that you were wrong and that it was just a Mandela effect thing. Anyway, our next email,
Tim.
I
remember that.
Michael Wright. Hi, Dave and Tim. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine sent me the obituary out of her Buffalo, New York paper for the actor Robert Guillaume. I was very shocked to see this, as I remember about 15 years ago, or maybe a little more, that he had a stroke while he was doing his television show Benson. Well, first of all, Benson's been off the air for, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
So I don't think you remember that 15 years ago. And I think his stroke maybe was about 10 or 15 years ago, but it was well after his show, if I recall correctly. They said he was taken off the show and had a hiatus until they planned on him coming back, but the show was canceled because of his death. There wasn't even a mention of him ever having a stroke in the obituary. She has no memory of this. However, my brother, who lives 250 miles away from me, also remembers him having a stroke and dying about 15 years ago. Like you, I also remember Kirk Douglas dying. I also remember Nelson Mandela dying in 2007. This is a strange world we live in, and that comes from Mike. Do you remember when Robert Guillaume suffered the stroke?
Yes, I do.
Right. And let me see. Guillaume stroke. I don't know. God, maybe that's the wrong thing to Google. Yes, right here. Robert Guillaume was an American actor known for his role as Isaac Jaffe on Sports Night. Guillaume suffered a mild stroke January 14th, 1999, while filming an episode of the latter series. And he just died recently of prostate cancer. So his last, looks like the last program he did was back in 2014. So yeah. I remember the stroke. And I kind of thought for a while, I thought I remembered him dying as well, but I don't know. It's so hard. There are so many false flags on social media because somebody will remember something and then they'll say, oh, I remember when Benson died, and you're like, oh yeah, I do remember that. And it probably wasn't a real thing. There are some aspects of the Mandela effect I just can't wrap my head around. Are there any that have stood out to you that really you can't wrap your head around anymore, Tim?
I'll give it this. About, I'd say 8 times out of 10, when people yell Mandela effect about something, it's easily explainable or it's false memory. But there are some, there's the occasional one that somebody will bring up and you go, you know what, you might have a point there, or you have something that's
right,
you know, that I can't explain, or I you know, but a lot of it is just people not paying attention. That's what gets me about the Mandela effect.
How about the whole, I am your father thing, the Luke, I am your father.
That one is intriguing. That one, but see, Lucas has screwed with the Star Wars movies so much.
Right.
That you wonder if there's got to be multiple takes of James Earl Jones doing dialogue, in that Lucas might have gone back and actually changed the dialogue in one of the cuts of the Star Wars movies and just never told anybody.
Right, but you would think by now it would have shown up on Laserdisc or Betamax or something that would corroborate the original version of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a bunch of weird stuff. Bunch of weird stuff. All right, let's get in a couple more stories. Hi, Dave and Tim. I know you get letters like this all the time, but I'm spooked. And you're the only one out there who will listen to this story and at least half understand before judging me a loon. I like that they know that I'll listen to it and then still judge them a loon. I need to preface everything that a few years ago I was literally diagnosed as being allergic to everything. I did allergy tests and I nearly died. It took a half a dozen shots of Benadryl and an EpiPen to keep me from dying. And when they did the routine allergy tests, I was their first person to ever come back allergic to all of the things they tested me for. They offered to do food allergies too, but I kind of felt those would end up killing me. There are foods that give me bad nightmares as my system processes them, Tim. and they always have. The garlic I put in my chili Sunday and small bag of Funyuns I had today were going to give me a reaction and a nightmare, but I hadn't had one in so long that I didn't think about it as I went to bed earlier. I was just trying to document this for myself. Like I said, I'm a little spooked and I'm trying to figure it all out. I'm sure it was food allergy now, so I'm trying to calm myself down and go back to sleep, but you never know. I fell asleep earlier and I was immediately in the woods. I walked into a group of people who said I was late and I missed the instructions, but they'd fill me in. We were going to investigate an old army compound and hospital in the woods, and our guide took us to the edge of the compound. He said he couldn't go in with us, but he said to leave our gear, any weapons we had, and just take flashlights in with us because people cracked up in there and didn't want us hurting each other. I was paying much attention as we went around the compound. As we were walking around, I made jokes about how this felt like it was a big G.I. Joe playset. The building we went into was apparently a hospital that was rectangular, but had an open-air courtyard in the middle of the building. I again was joking and pointed out that if it were a playset, you could hide toys in the windows here and there and make it look spooky. They wondered if the place had ever been open, if you could hear all the sounds from the building, because everything we did in the courtyard seemed to echo through the entire area. The dream progressed, and we eventually settled into do an investigation in the most haunted room ever in the hospital building. Like in real life, I was a skeptic in the dream. I felt like we were all idiots just sitting there in the dark and waving our flashlights around. As we just sat there, they claimed to see something in the dark and kept admonishing me for not protecting my soul. They were all putting their index finger up like doing a number one and putting it between their eyes, extending from the bridge of their nose up to their foreheads. I thought this was just a load of BS and just some routine that the group did, but I did not. Then one of the group members started screaming and seeing something fuzzy in the air. When he shined his flashlight, it looked like a mirror with steam and smudges on it hanging in the air. When we crossed our beams from different angles, it moved and we followed it to the wall with our flashlights, where it looked like veins and skin forming in the light. It turned into a face. Looked like a white guy to me with a big nose. I didn't recognize him. I was speaking, and while it kind of sounded like it was saying, I am Greg, and the people I was with were addressing it as Greg, I kind of knew it wasn't speaking in English. It was some language that was ugly and dark. I was going to suggest that we leave that thing alone and we get the hell out of there. When the guy who had first seen this thing in the air freaked out and started screaming, he ran out of the room and we could hear him running down the stairs. The face on the wall vanished, and as a group, we went running down after the guy who freaked out. There were some joking about how the biggest and the strongest of us, an Ohio State lineman, couldn't take the encounter as he walked back to meet our guide. The guide was now Native American. I didn't get a good look at him before since I was late. He said the one fellow ran past him so fast that he thought it was a bear running through the woods and the guy couldn't get clean. He suggested that since I was so late at night that the group should come back to his place and decompress. It would be light in a few hours, and then we could go back to our cars and go home. We went with him through the woods until we came to a mud house. It was literally a cabin that looked to be formed out of mud. When we went inside, there were two beds made of mud, but no fire. He said the group should huddle together for warmth, and the hours will pass quickly. This was too much for the rest of the group. They peaced out and left me there in the mud dark cabin. I was so tired that I stayed. I laid in the mud for a while until I heard people outside. The guide was coming back, and he had three or four other men with him. They were talking to the darkness and asked something to please bring some fire to keep them all warm. They had to charm whatever it was, say nice things and coax it. Then a ball of fire appeared in the air, and they stood around it to keep warm. I saw it wasn't a ball of fire in the air by itself. It was a hummingbird carrying the fire. I asked the men if they could see the hummingbird, but they all looked at me like I was crazy and said I was white and I couldn't see it. But then it started talking to it, and it was charming, and was charming it like they had done when they called upon it. I got to fly around a bit before it vanished. Then I started to get sick. I was really cold. The men told me to lie down and they'd warm me up with their bodies. I was really sweaty and cold and cramping up. The man on the left side of me told me to cling to him and not let go. As he laid beside me and I could feel another man with his arms around my back, their bodies changed from men to bears to Bigfoot to men again. They told me the worst of it was to come and to fight it and not die. One guy actually said, don't die now. That's always a good rule of thumb, Tim. Don't die now.
Oh, yeah.
No matter where you're at in your life, no matter what you're doing, don't die now. They asked me about my life. I told them about my life outside the dream. When I was really little, my parents both were working from the age of four, and I babysat my 5-year-old sister, meaning she ditched me to do whatever 5-year-olds do, and I was on my own most of the time. We were stationed in Puerto Rico. Both parents were in the Navy, and I spent a lot of time wandering the woods in the area where we lived and having adventures by myself, as I was expected to get myself to kindergarten and back. We later moved to Washington State after my grandma died, and in all of those years out there, I'd ride my bike through the woods by myself a lot because it was peaceful. I never saw anything strange or supernatural, and my independence ended when we moved to the East Coast when I was a teen and my dad got sick. I've been caring for him ever since, 30 or so years later. More screaming from the dark. I sat up and two of the men were trying to keep away another man. He was tall and white and had a face from the wall. The two men on the ground with me told me to be strong and not touch this new man. As the other guys were keeping him away from me, I got mad and stood up. I wasn't going to take this anymore, and I got angry, and the new man started yelling, die, 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 and was shrinking until he was just a large head. Then the head vanished in a pop. I woke up in the dream. It was daylight. I was in the woods alone. I was dressed in jeans and had a jean jacket on, and it was like a camera pulled away, and I saw myself. It wasn't how I look in real life, but now I was a tall man with the face from the wall. That was too much for me. I woke myself up in real life. I sat up in the bed. I half expected the covers to be torn off and be covered in sweat, but I wasn't, and the covers were all in place. I was just creeped out. I leaned over to turn on the light, and I heard a crunch. Somehow, I put so much force on my tablet, which was under my pillow, that I shattered the screen. Not sure why it happened. I've dropped that thing a million times, and it didn't break. But that topped the evening. Like I said, I know you get a million of these. I know it was probably just my body fighting off the onions and garlic that I'm obviously allergic to. But then again, the dream was so specific that I didn't know what to think. It was probably nothing. And I thank you for reading this. I'm going to head back to bed with the lights on. I'm also craving a Reuben sandwich. But LOL, I really don't want to think of what kind of dreams that would give me. And that comes from Jim Finch. First of all, I don't know. If you eat a specific food, Tim, does it give you nightmares?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I can't ever say that I've been like, yeah, that one gave me nightmares. No. I know that was kind of a throwaway line in the Scrooge movie, right? I mean, he's right. Like, ah, you're just an undigested piece of meat or something. I've never noticed that effect, but it sounds to me like is this a mental thing? And not in a negative way, but you're dealing with all of these allergies and all of these things trying to kill you. And was it just your body's way of saying, hey, you've got to get through this. You got to get through this. And you're dealing with those allergies and just the way the mental process breaks down. But I don't know. It's dream world. Who knows what's going on?
I just feel sorry for Jim that he's allergic to onion and garlic. Wow. I love those.
Allergic to everything.
Man.
All right, our last email. This happened in the late 1990s in a house we bought in Sandwich, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, a typical three-bedroom Cape. It was a new home. It was built on what was once farmland for the first several years. Nothing happened in that home. And then I finished the basement. I made a TV room and a separate one that was a crafts room. On several occasions when I was watching TV in the basement, I thought I could hear voices coming from the craft room. I knew no one was in the craft room, but I really didn't think too much about it and certainly did not scare me. And then one night while I was upstairs, my wife, who had been in the basement watching TV, ran up into the kitchen to tell me she could hear voices coming from the craft room. So I went down to check on it. Of course, there was no one in the basement. So I shut the lights out in the TV room in the craft room and went back to bed. Later that night, I woke up about 3 a.m. and I couldn't remember if I'd shut half of the basement. So I went down to check on it, and that's when I noticed the light was back on in the craft room. I knew I'd shut it off, so I just thought it was a little strange that the light was back on in the craft room after I'd shut it off earlier. So the next night, I wake up around 2 a.m. Our bedroom was on the first floor, just above the TV room in the basement, and I could hear someone in the basement. I can best describe it as listening to someone talking to someone else on the phone. It was like I could hear half of the conversation. I couldn't make out exactly what the words were, but it was clearly a voice in the basement. So I ran down into the basement, turned on the lights, and of course there was no one there. I was starting to get a little unnerved by the voice in the basement, and then 1 or 2 days later, it was Saturday morning, and my youngest daughter, 3 years old, was in the basement watching TV. She was sitting there like most kids do watching TV on the floor and just 2 or 3 feet from the TV itself. So I brought her down a small bowl of popcorn. I gave it to her and headed upstairs as she continued to watch TV. And as I opened the basement door into the kitchen and began walking across the kitchen, my daughter let out a blood-curdling scream. So startled, I turned around to find my daughter at the top of the basement stairs with a look of horror on her face and unable to breathe. She was so traumatized. When I was finally able to calm her down, she told me something very scary and disturbing. She said while she was watching TV, there was an old man standing behind her, and he pinched the back of her neck, and now it really hurts. As quickly as it all started, that was the end of it. We had another incident or occurrence in that house. As a side note, the incidents began after I had a few people over to watch the 25th anniversary edition of The Exorcist. I've never played that DVD again. Thanks, Dave and Tim. Weird stuff. I'll get the hell out of there, Rich. Burn the house down.
Burn it down.
Here's email. Let's just answer this one. Hi, Dave and Tim. I couldn't get through last night. I really wanted your opinion. My father passed away on September 11th of 2016. He died from Alzheimer's. About a week ago, I started feeling like someone kept sitting on my bed. It felt like a cat jumped on the bed, but I got up and found the cat fast asleep on the couch. I don't know what's going on, but it's freaking me out. I had a beautiful relationship with my dad. Could it really be him? If it is my dad, is there any way to open up communication with dad? Absolutely. Get right into your shows. Love you guys. Take care. Jacob from Victoria, British Columbia. I don't know if it's your dad. I would assume that if it only started after your dad passed, it possibly could be. Maybe he's still in kind of a fugue, confused state. You might just want to put a prayer out there and ask that, you know, the angels or Jesus or whoever you believe in come forward and help all of the spirits that are lost and need to cross over to cross over. That would be my advice to you. All right. That's it. We're going to take it for the rest of the day here. We're going to take off. It's been great. A lot of fun. Remember, if you're interested in getting the DVD complete miniseries of Paranormal Challenge starring moi, Darkness Dave, it's only $30. That includes your shipping. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll make sure to send you out an invoice for that. We're going to be shipping those here in the next 7 to 10 business days. So get your orders in quick. Go out and rate and review us on the Darkness Radio app on Google Play stores, or rate and review us on the iTunes shop for our radio show. So please help us out with that. And remember to check out our killer links deal. Christmas is coming. You might find the deal of a lifetime in anything you purchase by going through our killer links deal at darknessradio.com. Click on the killer links button. It'll take you into our Amazon page where we've hand selected everything on there for you. And whatever else you end up ordering by using that link, a small portion goes to help your buddies on the show support all of the administrative costs, streaming fees, and more. So go check that out for yourself. We'll be back tomorrow. We've got Paranormal and True Crime Tuesday. And remember, if you want to subscribe to True Crime Tuesday, you can do so by visiting darknessradio.com. Click on that True Crime Tuesday banner and find out what everybody else knows. It is the best in true crime talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.